This is Shooting Spaces with Rich Baum and Brian Berkowitz.
Welcome to Shooting Spaces. This is Rich Baum from Sacramento, California.
Brian Berkowitz here from New York, right outside New York City. What's going on, Rich? All is well?
Well, all's well. I'm not actually in Sacramento. I'm still down south of the border and spent the whole day playing music and kiteboarding. And I'm just finishing it up with a podcast. So life is good, but I'll be home.
Not a bad life.
In a couple of days.
I aspire to be you one day when I'm a little bit
older. When you're old like me. Yeah. But it's hard playing though. It ain't easy, but someone's got to do it. So what's up? Well, what's up with you? How's the weather in New York City or Long Island?
Weather is cold. Earlier this week, I was in Chicago for a shoot. That was cold. That was about 5 degrees. So it was brutal there. So don't go to the Midwest in January. But
there's a whole podcast there shooting in 5 degrees.
Well, luckily I wasn't outside, but it was cold there. But I'm glad to be back home and chugging along. So
did you get fog on your lenses?
No, I went right from my hotel was right across the street from my shoot. Conveniently. So I just hopped out of the hotel right to the shoot and got going.
Yeah, I did 12 degrees below zero a few months ago, cold food storage photo shoot.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
And I had to deal with I know how to deal with the fogging of lenses now. So I should do a whole YouTube video on that. So anyway, let's get down to business.
Before we get into the episode, let's give a quick word from HD Photo Hub. Provide your clients with the convenience of online ordering and scheduling with HD Photo Hub's new smart scheduling system built specifically for real estate photography businesses. With HD Photo Hub, you'll save precious admin time with an all-in-one system to deliver your images, videos, 3D scans, and property marketing kits, along with built-in client invoicing, order management, photography payroll, and so much more. Check out hdphotohub.com to find out more. Again, hdphotohub.com. And with that, let's go into our Ask the Guys question. We have a great Ask the Guys question, and we have a guest on with us this week to help answer it. So I'll play the question for you guys, and then we will introduce our guests. Here we go.
Good morning, gentlemen. A few days ago, I was listening to a podcast you had on copyright, and you had a photographer, I can't remember his name, I believe it was from Des Moines, Iowa, on, and you were talking about copyright infringement. The only thing I would love to address is what takes place. What legal documents do you have to provide in order to stop the usage when someone uses your photograph without representation? In other words, if they use it and you need to go after them, what steps do you need to take beyond a letter in writing to them to get the action to stop? I know there's some legal backup, like do you have to get a lawyer? Do you have to get a legal document? How exactly does that work? That's what I'm interested in. Because lately I had a real estate agent give my photographs to the new property owner in which they advertised the rental unit that they had just purchased on apartments.com without getting my authorization to do so or paying me for it. So I'm just curious as to the process as to how to get them to stop using them. If you could touch base on that, that would be wonderful. Again, this is Constance with Constance Ross Photography in Washington State. Thank you.
All right, Constance, thanks for your question. And I think the photographer she was referring to is probably Kerry Burns, if I'm not mistaken, Rich, in Des Moines, Iowa. But let's get into it. Let's introduce our guest who's going to help us answer the question. I want to bring on and introduce David Deal from the law offices of David Deal out of Charlottesville, Virginia. Welcome, David. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And you're obviously, I said law offices. So you're obviously an attorney and you deal mostly with, copyright infringement and that type of work?
I do. My practice is exclusively dedicated to representing photographers in their copyright infringement matters, whether it's just negotiating solutions or negotiating resolutions to their claims against entities that have misused their images or litigating the same cases in federal court.
Cool. And, you know, we'll get to the question in a minute, but I just figured we'll give a quick background of you. First off, why don't you just plug your website in case anyone wants to look you up or contact you. And then I was looking online. I was reading your bio. It said you were also a photographer for almost 25 years. So why don't you plug your website and give us a little bit of a quick minute of your background?
Sure, sure. My website is my name. It's very easy. It's DavidDeal.com, and Deal is spelled DEAL.com. And I shot commercially for almost exactly 20 years before I decided to go to law school and change careers. I shot, I was mainly a feature portrait photographer for magazines and a couple advertising companies. I shot with a 4x5 view camera that made my work a little bit, you know, even in the 90s, a little bit unique. And I just, at some point decided that I was always interested in law. At some point I decided that, you know, I was in need of a career change, and I went to law school specifically with the goal of coming out of the other end, prepared to represent photographers. And so there was a little bit of a little blip, in between law school and what I'm doing now, but I've been representing photographers exclusively for about 7 years now.
Awesome. All right, let's get into Constance's question, because I know it's something I personally face. I'm sure you faced it, and probably 90 or 95% nowadays of photographers do face it. And obviously there's so much more info that we can get into as we start speaking. But this is, her question is interesting because it's something that, you know, you see different responses from so many different people in like Facebook groups. Oh, I just found somebody infringing. How do I handle it? What's the first approach? What's the best thing? I mean, I personally found something yesterday, a new infringement, and I, you know, basically forwarded to my attorney, and I was like, what's the first step here? So that's something that everybody always wants to kind of know. What's the first step? Do I just call an attorney? Some people say just send them an invoice and don't even ask questions. So you heard Constance's question, obviously.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
Okay. So her question is interesting, because I think I understand, I think we all understand kind of generally what she's asking, but specifically, and your summary of her question is spot on. So, you know, someone who is less experienced or not experienced at all in either discovering infringements or having infringements brought to their attention of their work, you know, you just kind of don't know what the universe is and don't know where to start. And specifically, Constance's question was, you know, what documents do I need to get the infringer to remove the infringement? And there's not really an answer to that, because there is no paperwork that's required. I think what she's asking is maybe concerning kind of what information do I need to provide to make a takedown notice, a formal DMCA takedown notice. But if we back up just a little bit further, copyright vests in the author the moment the photograph is captured. So there's nothing, there's no paperwork or anything else that you need to get in order for their copyright to be in your work. Unless there is a written instrument stating otherwise prior to the shoot, the moment you capture images as a photographer, you are the sole copyright holder of those images. So
there's a good distinction, though. Sorry for interrupting you, because I want to, I guess, for some people who don't understand, make that clear, because there's a lot of false information that says that, well, not that says that out there, that I hear people say, unless you register your images, you're not the copyright holder.
Right. And that's categorically false. There is a difference. And the difference has become more distinct in the past 2.5 years because of the Supreme Court decision. But being the copyright holder for a photographer, the moment you capture the photographs gives you certain rights. You are always going to be the copyright holder, absent some kind of change to that relationship. But and from that very moment, you have the right or the option to assert your copyright against anyone who misuses your work. It does not give you the right to file suit in U.S. District Court. To file suit in U.S. District Court, which is proper jurisdiction for copyright infringement cases, as opposed to state court, copyright law is federal law. Therefore, U.S. District Courts have jurisdiction effectively, sole jurisdiction for copyright infringement matters. But to properly put a case before a U.S. District Court for copyright infringement, the author has to have the images at issue registered with a copyright office. So there's an inherent problem for a plaintiff with that standard. The standard is you have to have a registration to file, yet you can't file prior to taking the photographs. And there is a time, it can be anywhere from a couple of weeks to, you know, many, many months where an author applies and has to wait until the approval from the copyright office. So there's effectively a period where copyright holder is the copyright holder of the images, but cannot, if they needed to, is not eligible to bring a case before U.S. District Court. My argument would be that is inherently unfair to the plaintiff because it effectively shortens the statute of limitations period, right? The statute of limitations is 3 years from discovery of the infringement. And if a plaintiff is not eligible to bring the case before U.S. District Court for a certain amount of time, then it's effectively less than 3 years. But to answer Constance's question, an author, a copyright holder, or your attorney can assert a copyright claim against an infringer as soon as they want. I negotiate resolutions for clients with images that have not yet been registered with the copyright office. Mm-hmm. Now, for some opposing counsel, that's a non-starter. You know, for some opposing counsel, they will not negotiate with you until you have properly registered the copyright. Because if you don't have I guess as far as their reasoning goes, if you don't have the right to file a case in federal court, then there's absolutely no reason why their client should negotiate with you. But I can tell you, in practice, I negotiate and resolve copyright claims all the time that do not involve registered images.
But you can ultimately, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can typically collect more if your images are registered.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, in general, everything else being equal, yes, because you have the power to file suit, and filing suit inherently raises the stakes because if liability is not an issue, which in infringement cases, liability is usually not the issue. It's damages. Plaintiffs have an advantage when it comes to litigation. Most opposing parties do not want to litigate because it's going to cost them a certain amount of money, and they're going to lose on liability. And if the works were timely registered, they have a lot to lose, where the plaintiff has very little to lose. They have a lot to lose because they could be awarded high statutory damages, and they could be awarded, you know, the plaintiff's attorney's fees per statute by the court. So the balance of power in copyright infringement claims, it switches from plaintiff to defendant depending on where you are in the case and what the status of registration is.
Let me ask you a question, David, for me and for a lot of people that aren't currently really up on the laws, especially ones that I haven't gone to court yet on any of my images, but maybe in the future. How does one prove that the image is yours? Does it go down to metadata? What's the different ways that you would prove that it's your image?
So that's a very good question. So there are a couple different, ways legally. When an author registers and ultimately has a registration approved by the Copyright Office, that is on its face proof of copyright. So it is that, and what that means is the burden from that point on, the burden shifts to the opposing party to demonstrate that it is not a valid application. No metadata is required to submit with the images when you apply for a registration. It's just the images. But the other part of your question is, I get that request all the time from opposing counsel, registration or no registration. Well, how do we know that the images that are listed in the application are your client's images? Or how do we know that the images that you showed me that you're claiming are your client's and that are at issue in this case that my client may or may not have copied without proper authorization? How do I know? And the easy way is exactly what you mentioned. I quite frequently volunteer to provide the metadata from the images that my client has provided to me to demonstrate that the images are in fact my client's, were in fact taken in a certain location at a certain date and a certain time. There's a certain percentage of opposing counsel that won't even take that as proof, but there are all different levels of kind of satisfying what you ask, which is how do I, you know, for purposes of either advancing negotiations prior to suit or demonstrate or providing the proper information at discovery once you filed suit, how do you prove that the images are your clients? A big benefit to registering is that point is moot. Right? You don't have to provide metadata. You don't have to provide any kind of witnesses or testimony that you were there taking the photographs. The application speaks for itself and is de facto proof that the images that were submitted as part of the application are indeed the intellectual property of the photographer who filed. So it's again, depending on where you are in the negotiations, depending on whether or not you're litigating or not litigating, the images are registered or not registered, that the information to demonstrate the ownership and sole copyright, it depends.
Or you get attorneys who just want to bust your balls and ask for everything. I mean, I was briefly telling you about my case before, and you know, we're in discovery now and my images are all registered, but the attorney wanted everything, wanted my original raw file, which my attorney was like, he doesn't even need to keep that raw file. I mean, I happen to have it anyway, but they wanted that original raw file. They wanted the screenshots of the metadata. They wanted everything,
right?
Probably just to, you know, bust my balls and give me more work to
right.
do. But
right. Yeah. And it's in, you know, just to play the other side for a little bit, it is a valid concern. Mm-hmm. It is a valid concern that, you know, for opposing parties to require some kind of information or some kind of proof that the images are in fact the product of the plaintiff and the copyright of. But you know, there's legally speaking, the burden that a plaintiff has to demonstrate does not go all the way up to providing metadata.
Cool. So we sort of got off on a tangent, which is good. But to circle back to kind of what Constance was asking, and this is how I interpreted the question. So my interpretation of her question was, when you first get notice or realize that you have an infringement, what's that first step you take? And I know she asked for specific documents, but you know, I want to look at it and sort of, I think, answer her in a broader picture and not talk about, like you said, specific documents, because you said there are none. Every case is different or every situation is different. But what are the first steps for people to take, whether it's contacting an attorney, reach out first? And to combat that, also, and I'm just going to like, I'm going to ask this question so it helps with your answer. It's a fine line in our industry because, you know, for instance, I just mentioned, I noticed a new infringement yesterday and I contacted my attorney and he told me the best way to proceed. And I said, you know, I have to tread lightly because I'm on Long Island. It's a very small community, a very small market. And, you know, there's a builder who works with a lot of designers who are my clients. And I don't want to get that reputation as being that guy that, you know, if they infringe, I'm going to come after them. So, you know, I noticed this infringement. What's the best way for me to approach this and still save face with people and not be that asshole who's just, you know, coming down hard on everyone?
Yeah. And I think the best place to start always, and there are, I have clients that negotiate certain cases of their own, certain cases of theirs on their own, without consulting me or any other attorney before they take kind of the first steps. But my advice would be to at least consult with an attorney before you do anything, meaning before you either, you know, communicate directly with the party that's using your images without proper authority, or jump straight to having an attorney draft a, you know, some kind of demand letter. The reason I say that is the worst thing that a photographer can do is not consult with an attorney and get a 10-minute kind of review of the case, because in the very big picture, a photographer, if a claim, you know, kind of proceeds through all of the steps it needs to get to litigation, any statement that is made by the photographer, and a statement is a very broad legal term, meaning any writing, any communication of any kind, is admissible. And so the most significant mistake a photographer can make by handling something on his or her own without getting some kind of legal advice, even just some really easy guidance, is to communicate with the opposing party and say, hey, no big deal. You know, why don't we just, you know, call it, you know, $50 an image, or just credit me or something like that. The reason I say that's a mistake is because there is an enormous difference between what a potential claim, what the damages may be in a potential claim. Statutory damages based on timely registration puts you in a completely different, potentially, completely different category than an unregistered image that, you know, was used, you know, for a day. So you don't want to be in the position of being a plaintiff down the road when you find out that you're eligible for damages that greatly exceed what you thought they did. You don't want to be in the position of saying early on in the process, well, you know, no big deal, it's $50. Because trust me, the opposing party is going to come back and use that statement against you and say, well, you said your images were only worth $50 in images. You valued them at $50. Why should I now pay you more? Or why should I now, you know, kind of agree to resolve this matter for more than. So that's the biggest mistake that an individual photographer can make early on. And it sounds
it's a mistake I almost made actually yesterday in this case. And, you know, I'll just use this, you know, I'll explain to you what happened and you can, go on off on this a little more. You know, this was essentially a development company. They built it's like a gated community. They built townhomes. And about a year and a half ago, I shot them for the real estate agent who was representing the entire community. It was a new development. So he was trying to sell, there must've been 70 townhomes. And after about a year of his contract, he lost the contract with the development company and they hired a new agent. And not only was the new agent using them, the new agent was using them on the development's website. And the builder was also using them too, the contractor. So it's two completely separate infringements. So I sent it to my attorney and he basically said, you know, here's what I would do. He said, email them first, explain to them. He gave me the writing, you know, the verbiage, and he said, email them this. And he said, fill in what you would want for a retroactive license is basically what he said. Right. And he said, what do you usually charge for images like this? So I said, when I license images out like this, I typically charge around $350 an image. They used 8 of my images. So should I ask them for $2,800? And he's like, no, you're way off because your images have been on their site for 7 months. Let's say they went and your images got them a phone call that sold a $1 million townhouse. So they literally, you know what I mean? So you're talking about statutory damages. Your images could have sold multiple units in this where they made millions off using your images. Right. And obviously there's no way to prove that, but that's kind of what you're saying. Right. I went into it saying, all right, you know, I'll just give him a retroactive license for my normal price. And he's like, no, you can't do that.
Right. And there's the other issue that you touched on a little bit is there is the single most important thing that a photographer can do if he or she is serious about enforcing the copyright of their images is to timely register the work. That there nothing even comes close. And by timely registering your work, that means registering your work within 3 months of original publication or prior to the infringement. So obviously prior to the infringement is not really in your control, in a photographer's complete control, but registering them within 3 months of original publication is. And the easy way to do that is to register your work in group registrations every 3 months, and your work will always be timely registered. And my best clients, my clients that I consistently get the best results for, always their work is always timely registered. And so there is a third, it's less common, but there is a third way that you can get your work to be categorized as timely registered. And that is within 1 month of the infringement, if they weren't previously published. So that's a little bit harder to do, but there is actually a way that you can potentially have your work timely registered after the fact. And so any attorney that works regularly with IP will be able to size up where you fall in any of those three that would potentially get you into statutory damages within a couple minutes. And so that's the importance of talking even for a couple minutes to an attorney that can say, hey, look, why don't you wait? And it sounds like your attorney did the thing. Look, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but you know, here's, if I were litigating a case like this, this is how I would analyze it, and you should ask for more.
David, I want to break in here. Great conversation, by the way. I'm learning tons and getting motivation. I want to just strangle these clients. But with that said, strangle, I'm going to say the good people at iGUIDE. Are you looking to expand your real estate photography business? Stand out from the crowd by offering 3D tours, accurate room measurements, square footage calculations, and professionally drafted floor plans, all from a click of a button with the state-of-the-art iGUIDE camera system. Get your first 5 standard iGUIDEs up to 3,000 square feet free by adding the code shooting spaces in the referral section at camera purchase. So go visit goiguide.com to learn more. And remember, use that shooting spaces code, go to goiguide.com. Okay. Anyway, continue with this very motivating conversation.
So. You got to start registering your images now, Rich. Do you register?
You know how, oh, Brian, I don't want.
I'm not going to ask you publicly. We'll ignore that question.
Yeah, no, that's okay. And I think everybody should. And I'm just, you know, I have, but I haven't lately. But it's New Year's, so it's a great time to start for everyone.
So let me ask you, David, I see in a lot of the groups, this seems to be a common thing, and there's something about it that rubs me the wrong way. And I don't know why, but a lot of people say when you get that first infringement, just send them an invoice. I see it all the time. Photographers on groups all the time say, just send them an invoice and wait to be paid. And then if they don't pay that, then you take it to the next level. Something about that for me rubs me the wrong way, because I think probably 8 or 9 times out of 10, it was just pure ignorance that they infringed. It's not something they did. I mean, it happens malicious. In my case, it was malicious, but it does happen occasionally maliciously. But most of the time, it's just ignorance. They don't know the rules. They're uneducated. And to me, just sending them an invoice, here's an invoice for $2,500, you infringed my photo, take it, or I'm going to send it to my attorney, seems very aggressive. What are your thoughts on that? Good idea, bad approach, good approach?
You know, there is, you know, I've yet to, as many different scenarios that I have been a part of, I've yet to figure out some kind of discernible pattern, or, you know, every case is different. And what, you know, I sometimes, multiple times a day, I have what I would describe as pleasant, professional, reasonable, productive conversations with opposing parties, whether it's their counsel or the opposing party itself, representative something. And then I can have the polar opposite of that, again, multiple times a day, where my standpoint or my approach on behalf of my client is the exact same. And I'll get the polar opposite approach, where an opposing party, you know, insults my client, you know, denigrates the work, has no interest in resolving the problem. Every case is different. The fact pattern that you described is problematic, just, you know, for the same reasons that we talked about before. As a photographer, depending on the facts of the case, depending on what your legal options are, you are, by sending an invoice from the get-go, from right away, before you've talked about anything else, you're establishing a value to the images, not knowing how they source the image, whether or not you qualify for timely registration. You know, it limits you. That's all. It's not, and sometimes that approach is completely appropriate and will get you the quickest, most efficient result that you can expect. You know, it spares you litigation, it spares you stress, it spares you time, and you're in and out, and you are compensated as you would have been if they properly licensed the work. But sometimes you are without. Just the benefit of a little bit of information, and selling yourself short by saying, this is all you owe me.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rich.
I just want to quickly ask you, David, though, what I'm hearing, though, and the more I think about it, is we, the photographer, have a leg up, if your photo has been submitted to the copyright office. We have done nothing wrong. It's obvious we took the picture. It's usually obvious, unless they've got something that you have said or you have signed, they don't have any proof that they can use it legally. It seems like if it's done that way, it seems like it's pretty cut and dry, worth going down that road. What do you got to lose, especially if you haven't put a limiting factor like the value of your images? I mean, I would think it would be a no-brainer to me that if it was obvious to me and I had a lawyer or attorney like you that would agree with it, why not go there?
There are a million ways to solve the problem. And, you know, sometimes the photographer reaching out, you know, with the advice of counsel, reaching out is absolutely the best way to go, because you don't ratchet up the tension right away. Another approach that I've used quite a bit and I've advised some clients on is to approach the infringing party yourself, but don't mention money. You know, and I do that all the time. I send out demand letters depending on what the facts are, depending on my you know, kind of read of the situation. I sometimes send out demand letters that don't have a financial demand, because I just want to kind of see what the landscape is before we get into, you know, specifics about legal remedies. And that's a good approach too, sometimes, for photographers. You make it clear that you, number one, you are not happy with the situation. It's not acceptable. The opposing party has done something amiss, but you kind of put the ball in their court and say, look, this is a situation that we need to solve, because you know, you didn't properly receive permission or license to use the images. We can do it this way. We, you know, we can do it ourselves. I have regular counsel that I can get involved if you want to, so forth. So there's a million ways to do things. You don't necessarily, unless you have prior knowledge of the infringer, you don't necessarily know which way is the best way to go. And, you know, kind of on that note, Brian, when you, especially with real estate photographers and the real estate industry, I hate to say it, is hands down kind of the worst offender when it comes to copyright infringement. They just are. There are, you know, millions of photographs in the real estate universe. They are a requirement to do business. They are high maintenance to take, and they're high maintenance to capture well, and they get infringed all the time. The issue that you brought up earlier is about, you know, not essentially, I'm paraphrasing what you said, but essentially you don't want to burn your clients. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely part of every photographer's calculus about how they want to treat their infringement matters. But especially in real estate, you know, real estate agents talk to each other. They're always tied in with builders and designers and so forth. And you just have to, you have to take that into consideration in the way that you approach enforcing your copyright. You want to make sure that your colleagues and your peers and your people in your business think of you in kind of the middle end of being on one end a pushover and one end, you know, someone that is gonna flip out at the, you know, kind of the drop of a hat. You want to be in the middle where people know that you're not a pushover. They know that you enforce your copyright, but you are a reasonable person that, you know, is appropriately responding to a situation. By far the easiest way that you can get ahead of the potential problem is to have clear language in your agreements with your clients that clearly state under no circumstances are you giving any rights to your client other than the ones that are specifically stated. Especially with my clients in the real estate photography business, I'd say 10 times more often, the issue is raised by opposing counsel that the images that were made by my client for either a real estate agent or a real estate company or a builder were work for hire. It always comes up. And I don't know how they got on the train, but it always comes up. They say, well, it's clearly work for hire. And if they're a little bit more sophisticated, they have, you know, kind of the elements that are, you know, pretty well established when it comes to proving work for hire. The side of that most opposing parties don't realize is the default position is not work for hire. It is exactly what the Copyright Act states, which is the images or any original work that is fixed in a tangible medium is the sole copyright of the author at the moment it's created. Now, the default position not being work for hire is firmly on the plaintiff's side, but it's an issue that you can easily avoid. It is a not complete non-issue, and it is not even negotiable or not even possible if you include language in your agreement with your clients that explicitly state that it is not work for hire and that copyright, you know, remains, the sole copyright remains with the shooter, absent any kind of you know, agreement or modification to the agreement otherwise. That solves problems. You know, lawyers are in the business of potentially solving future problems. That is the best thing that an attorney can advise their client, is to be as clear and about copyright the sooner and you know, kind of the clearer as they can possibly be. That's going to avoid the highest percentage of problems down the road.
Sure. But I know there's nothing, I mean, there's obviously nothing we can do about it, but the problem with real estate photography is that when an image goes up on your local MLS or Zillow, it gets syndicated to thousands and thousands of sites. So, you know, in my experience with real estate photography, or in my infringement that I found yesterday, that was the situation, because I actually, when I found the infringement, I called that original agent I shot for. And I said, I just want to make sure you didn't give these images to anyone. And he said, no. So they just took them off of MLS or one of these other sites, one of these other thousands of other sites that they were on. So it's not even necessarily, you know, these agents or my clients that are doing something out of ignorance. It's just the images are so available everywhere, and probably more, like you said, than any other genre of photography, because, you know, an agent puts their images on MLS and they go out to thousands of sites, you know, within 100 miles of me, whether it's, you know, local brokerage sites or MLS, Zillow, Redfin, Realtor.com, everywhere. They just appear everywhere.
Right. Yeah. So. And that's, yeah. And that is the nature of being a real estate photographer, is that you are, your universe is subject to exactly what you described. MLS systems that whoever uploads the images I've yet to come across an MLS site where I've read the terms and conditions that doesn't grant the MLS site a license to use the images. Now, that does not extend to anybody that wants to copy the images and use the images separately. But that is what, as a real estate photographer, that is the universe that you are up against. You are working in a space where infringement is not exactly encouraged, but it is the opportunity to get a little bit lazy and copy images directly from an MLS site is you know at someone's fingertips.
I want to ask one little thing. I know we're running short of time. I just want to ask this one little thing that I do, and you tell me if it's worthy of people doing or myself doing. And all of my invoices, I have a little thing at the bottom, which just says, if you have paid for these images, you have the right to use them for this particular sale. You do not have the right to submit them, give them anything to any third parties or anything like that. Is that a good thing to do? So at least you know that you've covered yourself, that they've received this invoice because they paid you, so they know. And they may not, I'm sure they don't read it, but it kind of clears you. Is that a good thing?
Oh, absolutely. And I would, based on what you described, if I would even advocate for stronger language. I mean, there's no harm at being, doing a little overkill when it comes to limiting language. The clearer and the more frequent, the better. And on that note, I have an active case right now where the opposing party is arguing work for hire. And we've demonstrated we're not close to litigation. Yeah. We may end up there, but we're not there yet. But we demonstrated, my client is very, very savvy and very smart. And she builds into her website where every image that she takes is displayed and downloaded by a potential client. There's no other way for a client to either review her work or download images that are selected. There's a requirement that the user clicks through a couple different pages that have the entire page is dedicated to the terms of use. It's brilliant. And I wish more clients that are real estate photographers would do that, because you know, and she also has a record of, you know, what users logged in, what they did, what pages they went to, what pages, and there's a confirmation of clicking through this page before you download images. That is the best thing that a real estate photographer can possibly do, is to limit the access and the downloading to one site and one site only that has a very clear path. And therefore there is no exceptions to the fact that a user is, you know, is aware or should have been aware, or is going to be charged with being aware of how the images can be used, period. It's a great position to be in as a counsel to a real estate photographer, is to have that information on your side.
Cool. So we're running low on time, but I want to ask you one final question, which is more general question for people that don't understand, because it's a little confusing. But when there is a claim, can you explain to some people the difference between actual damages and statutory damages? Because I know it gets tricky, and actual damages are sort of easier to prove, I guess, unless you send an invoice, as you spoke about earlier. Statutory damages get really confusing, and that's a situation I'm kind of going through now with my attorney with the litigation I have, kind of figure out what those statutory damages is, and we're saying they're this, and they're saying can't be that, blah, blah, blah. So what's the difference when you're looking to try and collect, and what are you entitled to? Because I know with registering your images, you're entitled to some and not other damages.
Yeah. So I'll start with actual damages. And actual damages are simple and straightforward and clean. And really, there is not a whole lot of room for interpretation. Actual damages are the revenue that a plaintiff would have realized for the use made of the images. Period. There is no intent required. You do not need, I mean, copyright infringement is strict liability, period. But actual damages is there the actions, the source of the infringement by the opposing party does not factor in to the calculation of actual damages. All it is, I mean, the in an actual damages case, the opposing party could have the worst intentions. They could have, you know, kind of posted on social media that they are in the next day or two are going to infringe upon this person's photographs as many times as they possibly can with the intent of ruining their business. And that does not factor in at all to actual damages. Actual damages are limited to what a proper license would have been for the use made. The other part of actual damages is attributable profits. That is almost never applicable to photographs, in especially real estate photographs. As much as we would like the attributable profits to apply to the cost of a home, like someone buying a home, I have never seen someone thread that needle where they can show that a house was sold and someone purchased a property based exclusively on the photographs. That's an impossible task. So, and unless you're talking about a photograph that was used to print t-shirts or print mugs, where you can all but demonstrate the purpose or the reason that the purchases of these products was based on the photograph, attributable profits are almost never available to photographers. So you are left with the value of a license.
So for example, if you send an invoice, like we spoke about before, if that's your first step and you send an invoice for $2,000, you're basically saying, this is the cost of licensing my images. Your actual damages can't be in the litigation more than that invoice you sent.
Right. And also, you know, I this is getting into a little, some minutiae a little bit, but I shot for 20 years. I you know, a certain percentage of my business was reuse. You know, I shot portraits. I shot a lot of people that were in the news. I shot politicians and athletes and so forth. And I got a lot of business, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 10 years down the road of certain individuals that I photographed. My license fee for a third party is not necessarily the same as it was for my original client. So if a magazine hired me and paid me $1,000 to do the shoot that included a limited one-time license to use the image, that license fee is not applicable to the third party that is going to use it for a different purpose. The demand is higher, so forth. So the license that you charge, a real estate photographer charge their original client is not necessarily what they would charge for the third party use. So that's another reason to just get a quick take from an attorney, say, hey, look, does this make sense? Does it make sense to approach the situation with a license value that is the same as I charge my original client, or should I be adding some value? The answer is usually you should be adding some value. So statutory damages have almost no similarities to actual damages. Statutory damages are the federal statutes don't call it punitive, but statutory damages are punitive because they are based on the actions of the infringer, not anything to do with, well, very little to do with what a license fee would have been for the use. Statutory damages are based on the degree of recklessness and maliciousness and willfulness of the infringer. So they start at $750 per incident, and they can go up to $150,000 per incident, depending on the scale. On one end of the scale, on the low end of the scale, is innocent infringement. And a court can find that even if you're eligible for statutory damages, even if the images were timely registered, that the infringer was, quote unquote, an innocent infringer and can reduce statutory damages to $200 per incident. That's as rare as finding an infringer to be willful. But the spectrum is, on the low end, $750 per incident. On the high end, willfulness, you know, an infringer knew exactly what they were doing. They were told not to do it. They were warned not to do it. They consulted legal counsel, and their legal counsel said, don't do it. And they did it anyway. That's an example of willfulness. And that gets you big penalties. We almost never end up on either end of those. It's always somewhere in between. So the advantage that statutory damages gives to a plaintiff is that it is incredibly risky for a defendant to roll the dice at litigation when they're facing statutory damages. It may be $200 per incident, but it may be multiple factors of the statutory minimum, and it comes with attorney's fees and costs, which actual damages do not. So actual damages, no chance for attorney's fees and costs, and you're limited to what a license would be. Statutory damages is this wide open spectrum where you really don't know where things are going to fall. And if you are, meaning the plaintiff, if you are the quote unquote prevailing party, you are eligible for fees and costs, and the defendant is not. That is not an equal, kind of risk for the defendant. The defendant has much, much more to lose than a plaintiff does when statutory damages are involved.
Cool. That was answered well, and hopefully that's not too confusing to some people. So David, we're kind of low on time here. Before we close out, I'm just going to say our final word from PhotoUp. Are you fed up with the inconsistencies from your current editing company? PhotoUp is changing the way traditional outsourcing is done by allowing you to work directly with experienced editors on our team. Work one-on-one with a dedicated editor who will learn your style and preferences so you never have to worry about inconsistent edits ever again. Head over to photoup.net/shootingspaces to sign up for an account and test out 3 different editors for free. That's right. Upload 10 images to 3 different editors and you can choose the best editor and start working with them immediately. That's photoup.net/shootingspaces or click the PhotoUp logo on our Shooting Spaces website. And with that, David, I want to say thank you again for coming on. DavidDeal.com, if anybody wants to find out some info, if anybody has any questions about infringement, anything, just feel free to head over to the website, shoot you an email, I guess, and take it from there. But thanks for coming on. Thank you, Constance, for the question. I hope we answered it well, and I hope that gives you a little insight into the best way to start approaching your clients and do it right. And with that, Rich, what else do we have to say?
Well, we want to make sure everybody remembers that we have just released our 2 courses, Commercial Real Estate Photography with Brian Berkowitz and Residential Real Estate Photography with Rich Baum, yours truly. And these are 2 labors of love. I will speak for Brian. We had a great time making them, and they've been received by the community really well, and we're really excited about it. We hope you'll check that out under the Learn section at shootingspaces.net. It's there. And, you know, just go get yourself registered with the licensing board. And it's great stuff to do. It's the beginning of the year. So do that and also go out and shoot some spaces.
This has been Shooting Spaces. For more episodes, visit shootingspacespodcast.com and visit our education site at shootingspaces.net.